And thank you again for everyone who's helped us open the meeting by doing a reading. I take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. A massive welcome to any visitors with us this evening, and an even bigger welcome to any newcomers in the room that might be with us. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we are a speaker meeting, and it does fall on me this evening to introduce our speaker. It gives me real pleasure to introduce the gentleman that's come along to share with us this evening. We've kind of known each other for a few years, I think, one way, a bit peripherally over the years. We kind of bumped into each other. But it's been my real pleasure in the last 18 months or so, maybe a couple of years really, to have been doing some service with this man. I really admire his commitment to this program. I actually admire his ability to kind of point out when others are kind of maybe kind of stretching their traditions a little bit, and is quick to say, look, you know, maybe we should think about doing this. And the way he does that is so gentle and so loving and so kind. It's a pleasure to work. It's a pleasure to be doing service with him. I look forward to a continued liaison on that level. So, yeah, and I'm aware that he hit a pretty major milestone in recovery at the end of last year, went purple. I'll leave him to share that if he chooses to. I'm looking forward to Stuart to share his experience, strength and hope with us for the next 40, 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable to, with his journey to, into and through Narcotics Anonymous. So Stuart, please, the floor is yours. Welcome to the Hignor Saturday night meeting. We're glad you're with us. Please share with us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Steve. I'm Stuart, I'm an addict.
Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Stuart.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Perfectly, thanks.
So when Steve said 40 minutes, shit. 40 minutes. So when he's quite, feels a bit strange. I don't do online meetings. Not since we was able to open the doors again. And I've done the odd one when I get asked to share. I don't say no. But when you're doing an online meeting, when there's no one in, you know, there's no camera, I'm just talking to like the blank screen of the laptop. I know there's people listening because I can see people's names, but it's the first time that I probably spoke at the blank screen of the laptop. But that's quite different for me. And then the other bit is different. I've got to find 40 minutes. And Steve kind of explained it to me, and he said, Stu, what we do here, we give people 40 minutes so that they can actually get involved in their own story, which I'm really not a clue what I'll share about that, but I'll look at the clock and I'll keep to the 40 minutes. But it'll be really nice to go into like where I see how, see where I go in the story, in my story. So, and the other thing, I don't know anyone in here. Well, I might know every one of you, but I can't see you. So I know an Emma and I know a Christine and I know a Jay, but I don't think it's them ones that I know that are in here. So I probably don't know anyone in here either, which is also quite unique because you don't know what audience you're sharing at. Because I know when I do shares, I kind of look around the audience and I kind of sense where people are, and if, you know, if that's a newcomer, and I might share a little bit there towards that way, a bit of the connection with them and that kind of stuff. So basically, I've got none of that in here. All I can do really is just talk about me and share my story with a bit more depth because of the time frame that I've got. So I'm an addict and I've got 40 minutes. It's like bloody hell. So you know what I'll do, I'll probably talk about the last 20 years first, and then go back 30 years before that. I'm 53, so, but the last 20 years I've been clean. That's the important part. You know, I wouldn't have learned as much as I learned about the years before that if I wasn't clean and in the program. So, you know, it's probably best to talk about the last 20 years and what I can do then. I can probably find things to talk about from my first 30 years within that. So I came to the came to NA via a treatment centre back in 2002. And in 2002, there was quite a bit of funding for people to get into rehabs. And I wasn't an addict and I didn't have a problem. I didn't think I did anyway. You know, I'd been on a methadone script. I'd been using heroin intravenously. I'd been going to prison now and again, little short sentences. But I never really had a problem. And if I did have a problem, it was only the heroin and if I went to prison, I could stop that. But I soon found out the things that I could stop that in prison, but I couldn't stop it when I come out. So what I'm saying is I couldn't stay stopped. So, you know, I didn't understand about the disease concepts and I didn't understand about addiction. I learned that in the last 20 years. At the time, I just knew I didn't want to go round in circles and kind of, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, robbing Paul to pay Peter back, burning all my bridges, using one drug to kind of counteract another drug, using one drug instead of another drug, using one person instead of another person. Geographicals, I'd move from one area to another and take all my problems with me. I used to wonder why that happened. Now, here's a chance to go off on a little story. So I'd move away. I moved down south. I'm from Manchester. And I moved down south and I wondered why. Within a month or two or three or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever time frame, I would end up back in the similar place that I was in wherever I moved to, and that was using again, in a police station, owing people money, getting arrested, drug dealing, fighting, whatever that one of them things that happened, one of them things would happen no matter where I went. And I didn't understand that. I just used to find myself back in that same place again, over and over and over and over. And I kind of learned while I've been clean that's that kind of repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results. And I've learned as well, you know, it's the insanity of addiction. So I've learned that since being clean, and then I'm able to undo some patterns in my behaviour by going through the steps since I've been clean. I'll speak about them in a minute. But yeah, so I went into the treatment centre and because I just knew I didn't want to carry on. Didn't have a problem, but I just knew didn't want to carry on going around chasing my tail and repeating the same mistakes one after the other in a different area, one after the other. So I ended up in a treatment centre near Bristol. And it was a bit like a holiday camp, if I'm honest. There was 50 people. I'd never been there before. It was a bit like prison, but you could go outside. You know, and I kind of like, I'd never been to rehab before. And it was all right. It was actually all right. I got fed. You know, I saved a bit of money up where I could buy some clothes. There was other people in there and there were special relationships going on in there. And it was just a bit mad, but it was all right. It was all right. I wasn't like getting arrested, I wasn't fighting, I wasn't using, I wasn't in chaos. It was the first time, you know, in my kind of adult life that there'd been a bit of stability, and that was in a rehab. It's quite sad now looking back, really. When you look at that, now looking back from someone who's got a bit of stability in my life, 20 years clean, you know, looking back at that, that was the first time. I was 32 and I'm in this place and there's a bit of stability going on. But I knew best again, you know, I didn't think I had a problem. I didn't need to change much. I just wanted to rest. And I went back to Manchester after the 10 weeks. And I used the day I got there. And yet again, another time, it just reminded me of, like, you know, that it wasn't, it was easy to stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. It wasn't even actually easy to stop. I'd cry, I'd moan. You know, doing clucks and coming off Class A drugs, I just whinge and piss and moan just because that's what I was like. Probably just crying and moaning for a way out, really, so I could go and score. But I didn't really want to go back to that broken, hopeless place that I was in. But I went to rehab. I used to walk about in Manchester and I was just like broken as a man. There was no sense of belonging anywhere. There was no sense of being a person anywhere. I was just fucked, if I'm allowed to swear. That's the only real best word I can describe it. There's nothing left of me. I was just nothing. And that was it. And maybe that was the rock bottom, being nothing. You know, so I went to the rehab anyway. I went home and I used. And the next day after I'd used, I went back to the probation officer who got me into the rehab in the first place. I said, I've messed up. Can you get me back in there? He just looked at me and laughed. He said, it don't work like that, Stu. We just spent this many thousands to put you through 10 weeks. You've come home and you've used after day one. I said, please, I've realised now, you know, and I tried to manipulate him and I tried to blag him and all that. That's what I did when I wanted something. And I did that. And he said, give me 2 clean tests in a week and we'll get you back in. Took me 10 weeks after using once. 10 weeks it took. And what I did was I got him to put me on a methadone script. So from using once and he'd give me the ultimatum, took 10 weeks and I even had to go on a script. That was the disease. I couldn't stop once it started. So I didn't go to NA at that time, in that first time in that meeting. I wasn't allowed out because I was breaking rules, because I wasn't about to change my behaviours overnight. I think I had a drink as well. I think one time in after about 6 weeks in that place, I had a drink. So I wasn't even clean. And then I went home and I used them. And within 10 weeks to the day, he said to me, right, give him 2 clean tests. But what I did, I even manipulated that. I gave him one on the Friday and one on the Monday. And I said to him, that's 2 in a week. He said, it's not 2 in a week, Stu. A week's Monday to Friday. And I said, it's 2 in 7 days. He said, and because I was pestering him, he said, okay. Now, that guy, I met him about 3 years ago with my son, who's 15 now. That guy saved my life, that guy. And that was him doing his job. You know, and I took my son there. We just met in like a beef eater or something, and we had lunch, and it was really nice to see him. We stayed in touch, and it's 20 years has gone by, you know, and that guy gave me a life, and I've created another life as a result of that. No, he didn't give it, mate. It wasn't his money, but, you know, he seen something in me that I never seen in me, and he was there for me, and I'll never forget. There's a couple of other people around that time. One in particular. I was on a probation order in Manchester, and I used to get the bus with this guy, and he was in recovery. I didn't know about NA. I'd heard about the other fellowship, and I'd heard about rehab, because people go to rehab, film stars and rock stars and all that. And you know, Narcotics Anonymous, we kind of keep ourselves, well, we did back then, it was more of anonymous, you know what I mean? And I didn't really hear about it, I didn't know about it. It wasn't like it is now, you know, public information and PI and they go off and they share our message everywhere and it's public now on buses and on cash machines and all that stuff. It wasn't then. So even if it was, I wouldn't have been ready for that anyway at that time. And that's an important phrase there, you know, I had to be ready at certain times in my life. Even today still, if I don't want to change something, can't be forced. I did a step for tradition free share last week, you know, and I said, look, even today I can't, you know, and the only requirement for membership is your desire to stop using, you know, even if you ask me to stop doing something, I won't do it until I want to stop doing it. So going back to this guy on the bus who used to see from probation, and he was going to an NA meeting. And I said, can I have your number? And he said, because I got on all right with this fellow. And he went, I can't give it to Stu. He said, you're still using. I didn't understand that. He didn't want to give his number to a using addict to keep himself safe. I kind of didn't know that. And I went, okay, no worries. I said, what are you doing over there anyway? He said, it's an NA meeting. Oh, okay. And I was off scoring and doing my thing. First time I'd heard about an NA meeting. that guy went to the same treatment centre that I'd been to, and he'd gone home, and that's why I've seen him. And now I've stayed in touch with him for 20 years as well. He's 21 years clean. And I told him the story about 3 years ago at the UK convention. That's where the seed was planted to me. He didn't take me to a meeting. He didn't 12-step me. But he told me that he was at an NA meeting, and he looked clean and tidy, and that's all he did. He didn't tell me what they did there. He just looked clean and tidy and said he's at an NA. He must have known he couldn't carry the message to me as I was going to score. So, you know, that was how I got the message. Right, of not the message, but how I got to know about NA because of that guy. And about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, outside the UK convention in Birmingham, I was chatting to him because he shared that day. I was like, "How are you doing, mate?" And we were saying hello and that. And this other fella came along who I used to sponsor. He's probably now about 15 years clean. And they knew each other, these two. Because the fellow I used to sponsor lived in Manchester as well once upon a time. These two knew each other. It actually happened. The guy who, you know, told me about NA, he was sponsoring my ex-sponsor, my ex-sponsee. So I was saying about the story about on the bus, how he used to say to me, I said, "You 12-step me, really, in a way. You said you was going to an NA meeting, and I didn't have a clue what it was." I said, that might have planted a seed in me, so when the NA guys came into the treatment centre, I knew that NA was okay because you was going there. I don't know, but and my other mate was stood there who I used to sponsor, and now he's sponsoring. And he went, "Did he 12-step you on the bus, Stu?" I said, "He did." He said, "Guess what?" I said, "What?" "Did he 12-step me on the same bus coming back from probation?" And it was really, and now, you know, one of us is 21 years now, one's 20 and one's 15, 18 years clean. You know, and that's just a story about how we don't know what we're doing for other people, but what can happen from it. You know, all he said is he's going to an NA meeting. So I'll just digress a bit there because I know I've got to digress to get through 40 minutes. So I went back to the treatment centre after 10 weeks. They got me back in. And they gave me a choice of two treatment centres. Like, it was like the one in Bristol again, or its sister rehab in Norwich. And I thought, ooh, that sounds appealing, because all them lot will know that I was full of shit when I was there the first time. If I go back there, I can't go back there. And then, no, me second thought was actually, no, that's what I need. I'm going to go back there. And I went back to this treatment centre in Bristol, and I did 10 weeks, and I was honest. And I shared about everything that happened the first time there, that I'd had a drink, and that was manipulated, and all that. And they already knew all that. But she straight through me. I didn't know any of that. So I moved on then, and I moved on to, in that treatment centre, the guys would come in from NA. And it's funny that, because I'm doing an H&I share next week in Gloucester. Never done an H&I share in 20 years. Been asked to do a share, and I'm feeling like, you know, like, where you don't think you belong in H&I. Actually, I went to a treatment centre and the message was carried to me in H&I, from H&I. Even though when people talk about H&I, they always talk about prison. I'm quite looking forward to, you know, talking about a treatment centre. I work in prisons. Well, I can't do service in prisons. It's a conflict of interest. So I tried to do service elsewhere. So I came to Weymouth. I saw a couple of guys came in a couple of times in that treatment centre from NA. And you know, I'd see them and I'd think, oh, he's got a nice coat, or he's got nice trainers and they look clean. They must be using something at the weekend, though, because I didn't understand what abstinent meant. Didn't know people could not use anything. I'd never heard of it. It wasn't something that I'd heard of or believed. Yeah, so it was an alien concept to me, abstinence. So, but, you know, I didn't want to go home. I didn't want to go back to that broken person. I didn't want to go back to Manchester. I didn't want to go back to being broken inside. Because my experience tells me when I go there, I use. Anytime I've gone back to Manchester from any other area that I've been to or any other prison that I've been to, I use. So I didn't want to do that. So I went to this second stage treatment centre in Weymouth, where I've lived now for 20 years. Ironically, I'm moving from Weymouth on Monday, 13 mile along the coast, after 20 years of being here. So it's quite, it's quite a strange feeling that at the minute. All my flat's full of boxes, ready to move on Monday morning. So I came here, and that's when I started going to NA meetings. And that's when I learned about doing a bit of commitment, making a cup of tea. And what attracted me the most was the guys would ask me to meet them before the meeting or after the meeting, and we're going for a game of football. And we'd meet, and there'd be people who were smiling and laughing and hugging and joking, playing football, having the banter. And it was really, really appealing to me, that, because it was a million miles away from the groups of people that I was spending time with when I was using or in prison. These guys could talk about the prison as well. These guys could talk about the drugs. But some of the stories, you know, was reminiscing and connecting and, you know, all that kind of stuff, identifying. And I fitted in there. And it was clean, and I wanted something that they had. I felt a bit of a fraud, because I was only a few months clean, and I'd just come out of the treatment centre. And, you know, that's when it's like, it can be a bit dangerous when you've got to live life in the community again and all that stuff. And I felt a bit of a fraud for years and years, actually. Because to fit in my own skin, it took me a long, long time. It took me a good few times of going through the steps. Them early, I'll just digress a minute, them early insecurities, you know, looking at other people and comparing. Thinking, you know, when am I going to change like he has? When am I going to get a car like he has? When can I get a girlfriend? I've got no confidence like he has. All of that stuff took years. And there's been a few times where I've been walking down the street and the penny's dropped and the acceptance has kicked in. And I've gone, I've not been worried about doing that for a few years or a few months. You know, and I've started to arrive at 53, at 20 years clean, in my own skin. And be comfortable. Now, that wasn't on the cards. You know, I had no teeth. I had to get teeth put in. I was just broken as a person. No self-esteem. You know, it took years and years and years and years. And that might not be everyone's story. And at one point, I had a missus and I had a baby. And he's 15 now. We had a mortgage and all that stuff. And I felt like an imposter. Because coming from where I come from, I'm not supposed to have any of that stuff. I'm just a junkie and I'm just a criminal. That was it, really. So it was really nice to kind of grow out of that. I'm just a junkie and I'm just a criminal. Break it all down through the steps. Break it all down through the defects of character, through the step fours. Listen, my sponsor, he's been my same sponsor for 20 years. No, and I've sponsored a lot of people. I listened to somebody's, a part of someone's step four only the other night. Really nice to get back into that kind of work. I've got five sponsees, but, you know, when people are not doing the work and COVID got in the way, and just really nice to sit down with someone and listen to some really, like, step four stuff. Just because I know what I'm doing for that person and I know what it's doing for me. So I didn't know any of that at the beginning. That wasn't on the plan. The plan was just to get clean and brush my teeth in the morning and be okay. And that was the only plan. Not to use, not to be clucking. It was the only thing I wanted. And then I ended up, you know, coming here and getting... I ended up getting a sponsor. So what happened? Let me just have a drink of my coffee. So what happened? Was that meeting? 5 months clean. And, you know, and you had the guys who was shouting and screaming, you must do this or you'll die. I didn't like them. And then you had the little flaky ones in the background who won't speak. I was a bit more than that, you know, and I was a bit of a boy and I wanted to be heard, and I'd share every meeting and how great I am and whatever this was going on. And but I never had a sponsor, and I used to wear the you know, the people who was a year clean and more, I'd be scared of them because I felt like an imposter to them. And one day this guy who we'd been playing football with, who we'd connected a bit with through the football, and And I thought, he's one of them, though. He's one of them that likes, you must do this or you're going to die kind of people. Could really, really talk a good programme at like 6 month clean. You know, a year clean, something like that. And what is it? He's, we thought he was a year clean, but he owned a relapse after 6 months. So he's about 6-7 months in front of me. But he's my sponsor and he's been my sponsor 20 years. But I was trying to ask him, because some of my mates was going out and relapsing. The guys I was hanging about with, the guys who I was connecting with was more the guys who was criminals and the kind of addict like me, which wasn't healthy really. But, you know, I got the identification with them and with one of the lads and all that kind of stuff. That wasn't going away overnight. I don't need to fit in anymore. I don't need to be one of the lads anymore. That's not a part of who I am anymore. But it was then. So, a few people are saying to me, you know, I've relapsed. And I was like, shit. And then, you know, the guy in the meeting was the guy who was a year clean. Or I thought he was a year clean. He was hiding it. He was like 6 months cleaner. But I asked him, I tried to ask him, will he be my sponsor? And I couldn't even get the words out. I was too scared. You know, I was embarrassed, because it's not something you ask. To ask for help, it's a real struggle. I didn't have a problem, remember. So why do I need help? But I knew these lot was doing that, and one would say, I met up with my sponsor and I shared my step four. And it was amazing. Then me and my sponsor went for dinner. You know, and I thought, I want a bit of that. Or I need to have that, because these lot are saying that's what they have to do. And they don't use, and they're all getting a year clean, and they're all getting a car, and they're all getting this and a job, and a, you know. And anyway, I tried to ask him, and I couldn't get the words out, and he said to me, do you want me to sponsor you? Yes, please. And he's been my sponsor for 20 years. We've been through the steps a few times. He's listened to all my whining and moaning. He's laughed at my character defects. He's laughed at my denial. But the bond we've kind of like created and connected with as a result of that has been priceless. Now I'm looking at the clock. I think that's 20. What time did I start, Steve? About 10 past.
Yeah, you're good. Keep going.
Yeah, okay. So I'm looking about 10 minutes, yeah? 13 minutes I'll go for. Anyway, so you know, the relationship that I've built with him has been priceless. And he's still my sponsor. We don't meet up as often as we used to. He's got a wife, and I sat at his top table at his wedding, but nobody ever invited me to their wedding. You know what I mean? That just wasn't on the cards. And I'm sat at my sponsor's top table at his wedding, and you know, and he gave me a gift for being the page boy or whatever job I was supposed to be. I can't remember. But I've had a sponsor, he got married, and I've done the same for him. I even did a speech at his wedding. It was brilliant. You know, I've had a lot of them times where I get tears in my eyes. And what that's done, it's told me that I'm awake. My heart's alive and I'm alive. Do you know what I mean? Where I was dead for years and years, of just fixing with drugs or criminal or whatever behaviour I was fixing with. And don't get me wrong, I've fixed myself with loads of behaviours while I've been clean. Food, sex, porn, just, you know, seeking. And I've learned, and I've got myself into trouble a few times, and I've always stayed close to the programme. I've always had an home group. I've always had a sponsor. I've always grasped myself up eventually for these behaviours. And I've stayed clean. You know, and not just stayed clean, but my spirit's progressed. You know, my character defects have kind of got me into a place of, like, I want to let go of them. Whereas when I first got asked, what would it be like if you let go of them, I said life would be boring, you know, and I still believe that a bit, because we need a bit of, like, I'm a rebel from being a kid. I need a bit of rebel in me, I think. But I do like the spiritual side of the program now. I really love the peace in my heart when I walk by the sea and I go in little temples and things like that. I just really, really enjoy that. I'm off to Egypt in 2 weeks, for 2 weeks. So I'm going to visit a few of the temples. I'm going to go on a cruise down the Nile. Got a week on a cruise and a week in a hotel. You know, and I've worked really hard for that. Really, really hard. So, you know, and it's not like that imposter anymore. It's not that, because I deserve this stuff now, because I've worked hard for it. And I can do it. And I'm fortunate I can do it. I know there's people who can't do that stuff. But I know they give away in other areas too. You know, people, we all have to find out what's, you know, for us. And I'm just looking forward to going on holiday. But getting back to, I've got 10 minutes. Where can I get back to? Service, I suppose. So at my first meetings, I started making the tea. And I never thought for a minute that I would end up being the person who helps other people. And that's part of who I am now. It's not just because of the, it's not because it's called service or it's called my job. It's actually who I am. I absolutely love and strive of helping someone else. I've even adapted that, and that's grown as well, where I'll help them to help themselves rather than doing it for them and that kind of stuff. And sometimes I'm helping people by doing nothing and saying nothing. You know, I kind of progressed. But, you know, I have a job where I manage a charity of offenders, volunteers. We help offenders when they come out of prison. You know, so I have the ability to help people in my day job. I was a drug worker for about 10 years. A lot of us want to be drug workers when we get clean. I did that for 10 years. I've had the privilege of doing that. and you know, like I say, not a lot of people don't. And I don't know how that happened. I got a job in a police station. As a drug worker, you know, if you've ever been arrested, I was that person who knocks on your door in the morning. Hey, mate, do you need any help? You know, and it was so much a privilege to be able to help someone when they was in that desperate need, like people helped me when I was in that desperate need. You know, I know exactly what, I don't do it for that. I do it because I love it now. There's no reason more than that. I do it because I love it. Not because it was done for me. That was one of the reasons in the beginning. Just do it because I enjoy it now. That's it. And Steve said, you know, about service. I do service. I really enjoy doing it. It's just part of who I am. I enjoy. Up till about 15 years clean, I was quite socially anxious, let's say. You know, if I had a girlfriend, we wouldn't go out for meals. I'd make sure it was behind door, closed doors. You know, I was quite socially anxious. Anyone invited me anywhere, and I'd probably make an excuse not to go. My son's got Asperger's, and I think there's a bit of that come from me, social anxiety. But then one day what happened, you know, I'd done services and an home group all that time, and I did my own group, and it's okay if I'm comfortable doing it. Do it every week if I'm comfortable doing it, but once you take me out of my comfort zone, you know, I didn't want to go out of my comfort zone, I don't want to, and I put it. Got a new partner, and I'm out of my comfort zone with her because she's a counsellor. And she's deep, really deep. So I've got to get really open and honest about how I can shut down with feelings-wise and how I can just be independent and go home and want to be on my own. Easier than talking through problems. It's easier than working through problems. Just fuck off and leave me alone, going home. So I'm trying to break them patterns and them habits because the patterns have keep coming up in my step work. You know, so, and I deserve better than keeping on repeating the same patterns again in relationships. So, you know, and I know, I'm sure we can all identify repeating the same patterns in relationships. Yeah, so I'm just, you know, I'm still doing the work, I'm still working, but it's just getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, which I like. If it would have been this deep at the beginning, I would have run away. No way would I. Hang on a sec. You okay, mate? If I would have been this deep at the beginning, I'm just talking to my boy, he's just coming to check the football. I would have run, I would have been scared of getting intimate or, you know, talking about intimacy like that. Would have run away. So shut your door, mate. So he's 15. He's here for the weekend. I have him every other weekend. I've really showed up as well. I've surprised myself. Kind of surprised myself in a lot of areas, you know, that, like I said earlier about the messages in the early days, I'm never going to do that, I'll never do that, I'll never do that. Surprised myself in a lot of them areas, and I can walk tall now and have some pride that I've done some stuff and I can be that person and I can do that stuff. And the boys came along, he's 15, and I stepped up and he's still here, and we have a great relationship. He's Asperger's, he's socially anxious, he stays in a lot, and only this, he's 15. What kind of did some training around it, and what I kind of learned was 2 years behind, kind of 15-year-olds in a way in some of his areas, but he's 2 years in front in others. don't go out. He's never been to the shop on his own. So it's the other day he sent me a message asking me, can he go to the cinema with his mates? Pride, the pride. I was just like proud, really, really proud. And it's beautiful that he asked me. So there's a connection and a bond that I couldn't have created without doing the work on myself. I wouldn't have been able to feel that love and that bond without doing the steps. No, I can give and I can give and I can give and I can help and I can help. But when you try and give me a bit of love, stay away. You know, it's that kind of scenario. Stay away, get off me. And I've worked on that the last probably 3 or 4 years. More and more and more because I'm shortchanging myself. Run away, I'm not worth it. Stay at home, get back into my own routines, my own ways of fixing myself. I don't have to talk to you. I don't have to look at my meetings. Do all that stuff, sponsees, step work. But the real intimacy stuff inside, I was just hiding from it. And I learned, I remember someone came round one day and he gave me a little NA beanie bear. And I know how much they cost. They come from the States. And he gave me this beanie bear. I was like, wow, he's bought that for me. He's given it me. He didn't have to do that. I do it all the time. I give people coins and I give sponsees little gifts when it's the birthday. I remember everyone's birthday. I have all the Clean Time birthdays wrote down on me just for today that I read every day. I see the Clean Time birthday on the bottom and I'll message them and they go, you remember every year, don't you, Stu? Yeah, I've got it written down on me just for today book. But this guy really, really touched me out and I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know whether, you know, I went to go on eBay to buy something. I went to check Facebook. I just tried to fix myself outside of the feeling. That was feeling, and all he did is try to reach me and give me some love. And I had to look at that in my step work and started to accept that stuff now. It's really nice. And there's another layer. There's another layer of going through the steps against something. I would have never thought that would happen to me, you know, because I wasn't worth it. My self-esteem was on the floor. Just another layer. And years later, penny drops 10 years later. Ah, that's what they meant when they said that. Ah, that's what they mean by saying step 9, forgiveness. Ah, that's what they mean by that. You know, I didn't even know any of that. I just kept doing one day at a time, one bit of step work at a time. Nothing else, not seeking for no more. Getting a key in, getting another one, just go to another meeting, do another bit of service. Not really know where I'm going in service and just put my hand up. Sometimes I don't put my hand up. Sometimes I don't approach the newcomer because I don't really like the look of them and I don't know who they are. But there's other people who do approach them, and that might sound wrong, you know. And then the next week, I've seen them again, and I think, ah, yeah. I said, hey, mate, you was here last week, weren't you? And it takes me a bit of time. So, you know, that's nothing to do with them. That's about me. It takes me a bit of time to actually approach a new person. I think that's quite normal as well. If I see someone in our meeting and no one's approached them, then I really try and build a bit of courage up and say, hello, mate, you okay there? And a cup of tea. I know how important it is. So, yeah, that's me. That's kind of, I think that's like nearly 40 minutes. I keep trying to just simplify things now. I've got a my simple way of talking about the program is keep coming back. Stay connected in whichever way you can. And I've learned for me there's loads of ways I can stay connected. You know, people talk about the phone. I'm not really good on the phone. I'll use texts. You know, I go and sit by the sea now and again. I pop in a little church now and again. I'm not religious. I pop in and I just get the quiet time, light a candle and think about people who have gone. I've had a few sponsees who have passed as well. I've been to their funerals. So I'll stay connected. It's like a mobile phone, isn't it? What happens when your mobile phones die? And, you know, I know we're all obsessed about our mobile phones. And you see it get under like 10%. You start panicking. You know, and we plug it in, don't we? At the earliest opportunity, we plug it in. Or, you know, if you smoke and you leave your cigs at home, you panic. You know, but going back to the charger, keep myself charged, I keep myself plugged in. Like I said, read me just for today. I've got that new living, that Spiritual Principles a Day book, but I can't take to it. It's just too long. So I've got a little me just a today book, and I've got a little Buddhist reflection, daily reflections book that I read every day as well. I miss them some days because I just forget, or I'm not staying at home, and I just miss the reading them days. But my aim is to read them every day. And lately I've probably been only doing that like, I don't know, 12 times a fortnight. I've missed them a couple of times. And I'm aware of that, and I keep an eye on it. Got an home group that I've had for 20 years. Do service there. Just try and stay connected and keep it simple. And just, I've seen people, my mate relapsed in November. He was 17 years, nearly 18 years clean, he relapsed. People were saying, wow, that was a shock. I say, why is it a shock? He's an addict. Addicts take drugs, that's what we do. So why is it a shock? And I've just learned that I've just been not, I'd say fortunate as well, because when you get on the, in them behaviours and you feel like it's fucking, it's going, wrong, just managed to grasp myself up and stay connected at some way, shape or form. And I'm still here, but watching, learning through them behaviours and watching other people relapsing and them telling me what happened to them just keeps me more vigilant and more vigilant and more vigilant and keeps me putting this first. Because life gets in the way as well, don't it? Holiday. I probably won't do a meeting for 2 weeks. I probably will, because now I can do a Zoom meeting on my phone. It's great, innit? I'll be sat in Egypt on the Nile, and I'll just, me missus might have a row, and I'll just go on a Zoom meeting on my phone. That's sad, that one. I have to use that as an example, innit? But it's just life. Yeah, that's how we are. So thanks, Steve. Thanks everybody who's there as well. And thanks, Steve, for inviting me to talk for this long. I've never spoke for that long. And yeah, keep coming back if you're new. Just keep coming back. That's it. And just keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back. And that's it. Thanks a lot, Steve.